Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely, as always, behind the glass, keeping us on time and on target. And this program, this hour of radio, is about trying to get everyone engaged. And we do that through talking to people who are engaged in the community and others. But we're going to take a few minutes here at the beginning, because if my voice sounds raspy, I might have been yelling a little last night. Since this is the first hour of local talk this morning, we have to talk about the Iowa State ASU basketball game.
Number 3, Iowa State at McHale Center.
It's a whiteout. The place was as loud as I've ever heard it. And I'll tell you, that Iowa State team, they came out, they were trapping from the very beginning. Yep. They were playing physical. They created problems. I think we had at one point we had more turnovers than we had baskets made early.
Yeah.
Wow. But the crowd stayed engaged. They were on their feet more than they've been, and there were quite a few Iowa State fans. Sometimes, you know, U of A loyal fans will sell their tickets to one of these teams that are coming in where they know they could probably get most of their season ticket costs back
in one game. Missing the Duke game. Yeah.
And Matt, I know you didn't make it to the game last night. I know you're a loyal one, but what impressed me is when I walked in, the first question I asked you was, did you watch it?
Absolutely. I saw it, and it wasn't looking good for the Cats down the home stretch.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the Iowa State team, the Cyclones, missed one of their free throws with a couple of seconds left.
You think about it. Last night, first, when Vesar had to, with down by two or down by one, had to try to throw it off the rim and get the rebound
on a one and one. So you made the first one. Right?
Made the first and then drills it off the rim, and we come close to getting it, but immediately fouled. And what, 3.7 seconds? I think it had gone 3.7 seconds left, 3.2 at that point.
Yep.
Their guy comes down, makes the first of a one and one, and then misses. Or sorry, missed the first. I had that backwards. He missed the first, made the second. We inbounded the ball.
Yeah, because if he makes both of those, For all intents and purposes, the game's over.
Iowa State up by 3 now.
So now you got 2.2 seconds. You're inbounding the ball. You really don't. You don't have time to like inbound it, take a timeout. I mean, you've got to make the play.
And what happened next, Mr. Neely?
Two dribbles, shoots it from well beyond the half-court.
I think 54 feet. I think they said it was 54 feet.
Okay.
By the way, a lot of the faithful, which always bothers me, and I can't say we weren't going to probably try to be amongst them, right, but we didn't move. We're heading to the doors already. Heading to the doors because we're down by 3, you know, what's the chance?
Right.
Nothing but net.
Isn't that something?
It was just, the energy went crazy. People were running back down the aisles to get back to their seats.
Yeah.
It worried me because it was like, game's over.
Right.
We just won the game with that shot. Caleb Love had been 0 for however many on his three-pointers.
He was not having a good night. He showed up in the last seconds of the game and in overtime.
He hits it, and it was as loud in McHale. I mean, even the last 10 minutes, the crowd, the student section, the zoo, people showed up. It was as loud as I've ever heard it on some of those free throws going down the stretch where Iowa State knocked them down.
Yeah.
And it was all but over.
Well,
and
go finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, it was all but over. But he hits the shot, and the place
rattles
goes
that
crazy.
Thing home. Yep.
And then coming out of overtime, Love comes down, and you could just see in his eyes, he knew at this point he wasn't going to miss again in that game.
Right.
He drills a 3. We stop Iowa State. He drills another 3. Right. Now we're up by 6. Place is going crazy, and now nobody's moving.
Right.
Nobody's leaving. They call it, it comes down the next time. Carter Bryant drills a 3. Now we're up by 9. I mean, game's over at this point.
Yeah.
They're starting to make the announcements telling the zoo to stay in the stands.
Now everybody just wants to party.
Not rush the field, rush the court. They announced during the game with 39 seconds left, the players will be coming to you, zoo. Stay in your seats. They will be coming to you.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
And sure enough, they ended up winning it by 9. I did not get to sleep till about 1:45 last night because I was too busy watching replays on all sorts of different different stations. And one of the announcers said, "Oh, that's too long. That's too far." You know, when he pulled up, he said, "They got to get it past half court."
Yeah.
That's too far. Boom, nothing but net. And it was just amazing. And it made me start thinking back to some of the games that I know you've seen, I've seen in McHale. The energy there was just phenomenal.
Yeah, so this is the other side of the coin that happened a year or so ago. And I know you got lots of important stuff to talk about with supervisors, Scott, but a couple of years ago, we saw the opposite of this. ASU was here, okay? They launched a thing from three quarters court or whatever, nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
And it went from fevered pitch yelling to, I've never seen yelling immediately go to dead. You could have heard a pin drop a tenth of a second after that thing went rattled in. So I saw the opposite of that a year or so ago.
Now you're giving me flashbacks. I'd completely forgotten about that one, man.
So
that's
never
not
seen
a memory
a
I wanted.
Boisterous crowd get quiet so quickly and then just file out, just calmly file out of the place, grumbling a little bit. And so, and the other thought we saw when we watched this is, wow, had we been there, it's going to take forever because nobody's left. So it's going to take forever to get out of the lots. And
I might have done some creative driving getting out of the parking lot to get back.
We'll talk about that.
But yeah, we won't mention that one. What it reminded me of though, and gave me a flashback. And I don't know if you were in the game I'm going to talk about, but it too was a whiteout.
Yeah.
And the last game that was a whiteout, I mean, that I even can compare this one to, the excitement, and it was Derek Williams' block in
Washington.
2011 against what? You got
Best
it.
Killer.
It was, and I just watched it on video before we called up, and you could see.
Place blew up. We were there for that one, too. And then the other one that I think of is during the Miller years when Florida came, they were, I think, ranked fourth in the country.
Yeah.
And it's one of these things, Arizona was pretty much behind the entire game. And right at the very end, they pulled it out and won. It was some clutch shooting. And that was another very loud night in McHale that I remember.
And you know, as I'll introduce Supervisor Scott here in a moment. But what to me, McHale and U of A athletics can really exemplify the best of what Tucson can be. Because I guarantee in that room last night, there were people from all different persuasions of religious functions, of party affiliations.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. It didn't matter. Everybody that was
sure.
there supporting both the U of A and it, to a large extent the region and Tucson, because that's what we've got.
You bet.
We've got U of A sports. So, all right. Well, enjoy that, Matt. I appreciate it. You come on and chime in with me because you can see I'm still excited.
Of course.
But let me get on to our guest, the engagement hour. So I'm real honored to have Supervisor Rex Scott, the newly elected chair of the Board of Supervisors, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Supervisor Scott got elected to his second term in 2024, so he's been serving since 2020, a longtime educator, which his wife is as well. Moved to Pima County in 1991, still teaching possession, studying in the Flowing Wells Junior High School. And I'll let you give a little bit more of the detail on that. What I like to do in the show is to hear people's journeys and stories and what got them involved in anything, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's their community, whether it's a business, or if they were willing to step up and run for elected office, because that's not always easy. So, Supervisor Scott, thank you for being here today. I'll probably call you Rex the rest of the day on the show. But can you talk a little bit about what brought you to Tucson? And what first got you involved in, you know, politics or in stepping up and doing stuff in your community? Obviously, as an educator, you did as well.
Ted, thanks very much for the invitation. And I really enjoyed listening to you and Matt exult over last night's victory over the Cyclones. I told both of you guys when I came into the studio, I think my Tucsonan credentials need to be yanked because I forgot about the game. So I didn't watch a minute of it. I have a lot of replays I need to watch when I get home.
It was an amazing game.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting caught up. But I moved here in 1991 when I was 27 years old. And prior to that, I had lived most of my life in Athens, Ohio, which is where Ohio University is. My father was a journalism professor there, and I became, in 1987, the youngest person ever elected to city council in Athens, Ohio, and the first Ohio University student elected to serve in that role. And that was really the culmination at the time of what had been an ongoing interest in the challenge of leadership that I think started when I was a little boy. A lot of the books that my dad gave me when I was a kid were biographies and histories of famous leaders like Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, people that he had admired. And I can't remember a time that I wasn't interested in the challenge of leadership. So it seemed like a very natural progression to run for city council when I was a very young age. And I served in that role for 3.5 years. And then I resigned near the end of my second term. We served two-year terms on the city council in Athens to move out here. I followed a girl out here. It was a girl that I was dating when I was a councilman and a substitute teacher in Athens, and she was a graduate student in hearing and speech sciences at OU. And we agreed that whoever found a job first, the other person would go to where they were headed. And she got a job here at St. Joe's Hospital as a speech and hearing technician. I came out here in the summer of 91.
Welcome to Arizona.
Man, no kidding. I had one of the most ferocious sunburns of my life during that week that I was here staying in her apartment and spending every spare moment when I wasn't looking for a job out by her pool.
So I got to ask, though.
Sure.
So she considered you being an elected council member not an actual job, or is that because an actual job with good pay?
Well, it was a part-time job.
Okay.
It certainly wasn't a full-time job with good pay, and neither was substitute teaching. But we had been together for over 3 years, and we weren't engaged, but we were engaged to be engaged. And so I resigned a safe city council seat and completely uprooted my life, moved almost 2,000 miles away from where I grew up, and she and I broke up. It was during that transition period where I had already signed a contract with the Flowing Wells School District. I won't get into all the reasons that we broke up, but we did. And I came here anyway, not only because I had signed a contract with the school district.
So did she never move out?
No, she was already here. She moved here in the spring of 91, and I came here in the summer of 91 and stayed at her apartment. She lived over on Speedway in Camino Seco, and that's when I got the job with Flowing Wells. So no, she was already here, but I haven't seen her since then. I met the woman that I have just celebrated over 30 years of marriage with 10 months later. We got married in 1994, and we brought twins into the world, one boy, one girl, 11 months after we got married in 1995. And we're both educators. My wife was an elementary school teacher, taught kindergarten, first, second, and third grades. She loved kindergarten the most. And I was a middle school teacher. And right after we got married, I thought about, she and I both thought about, perhaps she would be an at-home mom. So I had to replace her income if that was going to happen. And I went to work for an insurance company for a year, which was a very poor decision for two reasons. Number one, I was horrible at the new job. I got fired after missing my sales quota two quarters in a row. Got fired right after the twins were born, which added a new level of stress to things. And I also missed education. And it was after I got back into education that I thought about how I could have a greater impact on more kids than if I had stayed in the classroom. So I started a master's program in educational leadership, and I was teaching and going to classes at night. Was done with that master's program in 1999. The next year, I got a job as an assistant principal at a middle school in TUSD. Interestingly, one of our deputy county administrators, Steve Holmes, was also appointed to an assistant principal position at a middle school, another middle school in TUSD, at the same board meeting. So that's how long I've known Steve Holmes. And that started a 19-year career as an administrator at five different middle and high schools as either an assistant principal or a principal. Retired in 2019, and then the next year decided to run for the Board of Supervisors.
That's a perfect opportunity for us to jump to a break. We've kind of set your life's path up to the point of getting into elected office in Pima County. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice. This is Trusted Local News and Talk. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and this is we're on 1030 The Voice, Trusted Local News and Talk. My guest today is Pima County Chair, Supervisor Rex Scott. We kind of set the tone for you, after all that great basketball talk, kind of set the tone of what your career once you moved out and got settled in Pima County. Your wife's lifelong educator, two twins. And then in 2019, you decided to retire after over 19 years, I believe, as an administrator, working in many different schools throughout the region. And then you said you started to think about running for office again. Can you kind of talk us through why that seemed like a good idea at the time?
Well, I had really always planned to get back into elected politics after I retired as an educator. There's no time. If you know anybody who's been a middle or high school principal or a principal at any level, there's no time to run for office. Those jobs are 24/7 commitments. Moreover, I certainly didn't want to get back into elected politics when my wife and I were focused on our marriage and raising our kids. But in 2019, I had bought back some years of service from Ohio, and as a result of coupling those years that I bought back with the 27 years that I'd been an educator in Arizona, I was able to retire with 30 years of service. I had always thought that I would run for the legislature because so much of what the legislature does impacts kids and their well-being and the schools that they attend. But a couple of people asked me if I had ever considered running for the Board of Supervisors. And when I looked at the responsibilities and the roles of supervisors, I really felt that what they did was much more aligned with my experience as an administrator than being a legislator. I also, honestly, our kids had moved out a couple of years before I retired, and Terry and I, my wife, were enjoying the fact that it was just the two of us, and I didn't want to spend tons of time away from her being up in Phoenix. So I saw the role of a supervisor as being more aligned with my prior experience, and I also really didn't want to spend that time away, that much time away from my wife if I'd been in the legislature. But here was a substantial difference. If you had talked with me when I was a 24-year-old city councilman, everything was about personal ambition. I could have told you that the path that I had for myself politically I'm, you know, not to sound grandiose, but the destination that I had in mind after climbing the political ladder was 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I was going to go from city office to county office to state office to federal office and ultimately be president. When I decided to run for the board in 2020, that was almost 30 years after I had left city council. And by that time, I had been a husband, a father, an educator, and I was thinking less about personal ambition and more about service. And I remember telling my students in the last promotion ceremony that I oversaw as a middle school principal that every mistake that I had ever made, every regret that I had, every hurt that I had caused, every word that I wish I could have stuffed back into my mouth, all of those things traced back to selfishness. And that's why I think the most important attribute for any leader to keep in mind and to hopefully manifest is selflessness. And I think this second foray into politics that started in my late 50s as compared to the first one, which started in my early 20s, is that it's not about personal ambition so much as it's about service and hopefully selflessness.
So with that in mind, when you won your election in 2020 and took your seat on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, what were your goals and aspirations? Where did you think you could serve those who not only elected you, but serve the entire district better?
Well, one of the things that I learned when I was a council member in Athens, Ohio, and this is certainly true for anybody in local government, is that the essential role of any local government is to ensure that all of the services and supports that your constituents depend upon are delivered with equity, responsiveness to their needs, and respect for the public tax dollars entrusted to you. And that's why your first and ongoing task is to learn everything that you can about the organization, learn everything that you can about county government. What are we doing well in terms of delivering those services and supports to the 1.1 million people who live in Pima County, and what can we do better? There's also a problem-solving component of being on a policy-making board like the Board of Supervisors that is very compelling to me. And you also can get into problem solving at a micro level with regard to constituent service.
All right. When we return from the break, we'll talk more detail about what's coming in the next year. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back after the bottom of the hour. Good morning. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass picking the music, and the one shining moment was a great follow-up to our basketball discussion. Tucson Appliance is your local leader for all things appliances and has been for over 30 years. They're family-owned and operated and since 1991 when Bill Edwards opened Tucson Appliance. His son, Chris, and Chris's son, Corbin, are now running the company. And if you have any needs or any desires for new, slightly used appliances, they can set you up. And they will make sure you're happy and you get what you're looking for. So I want to thank Tucson Appliance Company for coming on as a sponsor of Jump in Tucson. Also tomorrow, please listen to Jump in Tucson as Grant Kruger, as I swipe up to try to get where I need to go. Grant Kruger's guest will be Arnold Silva, the owner of La Botana Mexican Restaurant, which formerly was at First in Fort Lowell. So there could be a couple interesting stories there as well. So my guest today is Supervisor and now the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Rex Scott. So we talked about why you've got in your different perspective of leadership. Now you're in charge of the board. You're the chair. So you get to have more input into the agenda. You get to have more say, and you probably have to do a little bit more working with all the members when it comes to the issues that are coming to the forefront on the board. What do you see your role, and is it going to be the same as Adelita Grijalva's, the way she managed the board? What do you see doing maybe differently?
Well, I had two outstanding examples of how to be an effective and engaged chair, not just from Supervisor Grijalva, but also from Supervisor Bronson during our first 2 years as a board. And what I really appreciated about both of them is that they recognized that when you're the board chair, you're the first among equals. Your job is to make sure that the meetings run smoothly and that every supervisor has an opportunity to be heard on any item that they want to discuss. But the most interesting part about being the board chair is when you're called upon to be the face and voice of the county when different issues come up. we had to make a very difficult decision based on some decisions that have come out of the new Trump administration to close our two shelters where we had housed legally processed asylum seekers during the brief time that they're in the county. And the those decisions raised a lot of interest in local media. So I did a lot of interviews last week with print, radio, and television reporters. But I also think you have an opportunity when you're the board chair to have the board deal with some significant issues of policy. And so I think you're going to see us during this year, talking about overall strategic planning. I have already had some conversations in my first term with Supervisor Grijalva, just had a conversation last weekend with Supervisor Allen, our new colleague from District 3, and have also had some conversations with the county administrator, Ms. Lesher. Had a conversation on the way to the studio this morning with one of the deputy county administrators, Mr. DeBonis, about the need for us to get into some long-term strategic planning. The county has never had an overarching strategic plan. We have master plans in a lot of different departments, and there are some that are in process right now, for example, with the Parks and Recreation Department. But we don't have never had an overarching strategic plan for the county. That's going to happen. That's going to really come to the fore in this coming year.
Strategic planning can be a challenge, especially for elected officials, because you do have a tendency to change out every once in a while. Maybe not so much in this community or the more local you get, but it is definitely becomes a little bit of a political spitball as well, just because when you're talking about now a 10 or 20 year plan versus what's going to get done now, it can be more difficult. So I wish you luck on that. What do you see being in this first year of your term? Obviously, I've worked with you a lot on RT. I know how much you value that. Now, Supervisor Grijalva will step into your role on the RTA, and she's already reached out to me, and she's looking forward to continuing kind of the path that you've taken us down, and we'll see where that goes. But from your perspective as the chair, what are the policy issues, or at least one of the major policy issues you believe needs to be addressed this year?
Well, that's a big one. And I know that Supervisor Grijalva is going to continue what I did during the last 4 years, which is before any RTA board meeting, she will sit down, as I did, with the county administrator, the deputy county administrators, department heads, especially in transportation, so that anytime she says something in those meetings, it's going to be an enunciation of the county's position, just like that was what you heard and saw from me over the last 4 years. And our focus is going to be always bringing people together, bringing together the cities, the towns, the tribe, the nation, and making sure that whatever we put in front of the voters, regardless of where you live in Pima County, you have a reason to support it. I heard Supervisor Grijalva last week on Bill Buckmaster's show talking about the importance of unanimity and bringing everybody together. And as you and I have talked about many times, the impact not only on our infrastructure, but also our prospects for further economic development if we don't have an RTA Next plan passed is significant. And that's especially significant for the 34% of people in Pima County who live in unincorporated Pima County, and whoever represents the county on the RTA board needs to be the voice and the advocate for those people.
And I believe the county will get behind the RTA. I think we will find a way to get something on the ballot that the county will be behind. I hope we can get all the municipalities. I mean that, all the municipalities on board. Obviously worried about the city, but there's also, you know, Oro Valley and Sarita. They're not on board yet either. So we've still got some work to do on that. So what's an issue that the County Board of Supervisors, you think, can take on themselves and impact this year?
We have to lead the way in dealing with both homelessness and housing. The biggest issue that we have in the homeless community is people who refuse shelter and services. We need to take a look at increasing the amount of shelter space. We need to look at examples from other communities around the country, such as Washoe County in Nevada, Harris County in Texas, that have done a good job of not only ensuring that people take advantage of services when they are offered to them, but then that they successfully move from temporary housing, shelter space, into permanent housing. And we, the county really is in a position to be able to lead the way in that area of policy, and also in terms of increasing our housing stock, not just in the affordable realm, but also in workforce and marketplace housing through the work that is happening on the Regional Affordable Housing Commission that we formed a few years ago.
And real quick, there's a bill being carried by Senator Leach,
yes,
that the county has been working,
yep,
hand in hand with business organizations like SLC and others to develop, that might help get people in the right state of mind so they can make that decision that they really do want help.
And the board voted 5-0. And you know how hard it is to get all five of us to agree on something, Ted. The board voted 5-0 to advance that bill that Senator Leach is carrying on behalf of the county. And not only have representatives from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, but our county's lobbyists have been working with Senator Leach to ensure that that bill, which will give us more options in terms of helping people who are dealing with substance abuse, get a hold of their lives and be able to move forward. There was a similar bill in the last session that aroused opposition from both the left and the right of the spectrum. I think the work that we've been doing with this legislation that Senator Leach is carrying, I'm cautiously optimistic about its chances in this session.
And that bill's SB 1257, for anybody who is curious about court-ordered stabilization. It would allow those under the influence to get to a point where they can make a good decision because the drugs more or less will be out of their body and they can make a decision that way. Thank you, Supervisor Scott. I appreciate you being on with me today and look forward to having you again.
I really enjoyed it, Ted. Thanks very much.
Right, you're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice. We'll be back after the break with Stephen Levin from RJP Estate Planning. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and as always, Matt Neely's keeping us on time and on target behind the glass. Join us now is Stephen Levin from RJP Estate Planning to discuss why having an estate plan is crucial. Crucial for anyone in Arizona who owns a home or has personal assets over $75,000. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing great today. So let's start with this. What are the risks for people who have these types of assets and don't have an estate plan?
Yeah, Ted. So, you know, not having an estate plan, I use the analogy a lot. It's like sailing into a storm without a life jacket. If something unexpected happens, you know, obviously without having right estate plan, your loved ones could face financial chaos. So especially here in Arizona, the probate thresholds are still low. So a lot of people don't realize if you own a house in Arizona, or if you have over $75,000 in personal assets, which include, you know, savings, retirement accounts, other valuable possessions, it's critical to have the proper estate plan to avoid probate. Without having that plan, going to probate, you risk losing control over your assets and how they're passed down after you pass away. You know, even worse, your estate could be tied up in probate court, which could cause your family to face long delays, legal fees, unnecessary stress. So, you know, we always really try to drive home the point. Having a comprehensive estate plan not only protects you during your lifetime, but also ensures your wishes to be honored when you're gone. And so the time is really to prepare now, while you're alive, while you're healthy, in a sound state of mind. Get everything, organize your ducks in a row with an estate plan now in case something unexpected happens.
So, Stephen, what do you mean by something unexpected?
So, life's unpredictable. We all know that. You know, knock on wood, you can get into a car accident. You can suffer from a stroke, any other type of serious illness. Develop dementia later in life. Any of these unexpected events can leave you incapacitated. So if you don't have the right documents in place, like financial and healthcare power of attorneys, your family could be forced to go through a probate process initially when you're incapacitated, just to prove you're incapacitated. And then once that's proven, who's going to manage your finances, maintain your estate? Who's going to make your medical decisions? This could all be appointed by the court. The court could choose somebody that they feel that they deem necessary to handle those decisions, and that might not be the person or people that you would have chosen yourself. The process can also take time. So if something unexpected happens, you're hurt, you're mentally incapacitated, while the court's figuring it out, it's going to cost your family legal fees. It's going to cost more money, to pay bills. If your accounts are frozen, if nobody can access those accounts to pay your bills, bills can become delinquent. Somebody's going to have to pay for that out of their pocket. Your medical wishes might not be followed the way you would want them to be followed or the family would want them to be followed. It's an unnecessary risk that no family should have to face.
Well, a lot of times I don't think people think about what it'd be like if somebody became incapacitated, and that's bad enough. But what happens if you pass away and you don't have an estate plan?
Yeah, so that's going to cause an even bigger legal mess for the people you leave behind. So without a plan, even with just a simple will, your loved ones could face financial hardship and even legal battles. So settling your estate in probate court, what that means is it could take 6 months to a year, even longer. It's going to rack up legal fees in that probate court. It's going to delay the time of it takes to have your loved ones inherit the assets you leave behind. And what happens is, while everything's frozen, your bank accounts could be frozen during that probate process. So it's the same thing. If you passed away, who has access to those bank accounts to pay your bills, your funeral expenses? As a result, your family is going to be forced to cover your home mortgage, your property tax, your insurance, other expenses out of their own pocket until your estate's settled. So it's real heartbreaking to see, adult children grieving after losing their parents, only to face that financial and legal challenge because their parents didn't realize that a will alone was not enough to avoid probate. What their parents truly needed was a comprehensive estate plan to protect their loved ones. And, that ultimately secures the financial future of your family.
Well, I think a lot of people believe that a will is all they really need.
Yeah, and I see that all the time. People walk in my office every day and they say, I don't know if I really need in this, a trust. I have a will. A will is enough, right? And I say, no, that's actually, it's a pretty strong misconception that a will protects everything. But it's not the case. So a will doesn't address what happens to you if you're alive but become mentally incapacitated. A will doesn't say who are your agents to be able to make financial decisions and medical decisions while you're alive. Also, after you pass away, a will has to go through probate court. And probate's public. Anybody can go in there and try to say they're entitled or argue. That's, we talked about probate earlier. Probate's going to cause delays. It's going to freeze accounts. It's just a nasty thing. So living trust is ultimately what you want, especially in Arizona. Like I touched on earlier, the thresholds are so low as far as net worth. Most people need a living trust to avoid probate. Living trust is a document that you need that offers multiple levels of protection. One, protection if you're incapacitated. Two, after you passed away, a living trust names a trustee, which can step in to manage your assets after you pass. And any assets that you place into your trust will be protected from probate court. So those assets can be shielded from creditors for a period of time. There's very little public awareness about the importance of a living trust. So that gives you and the family control over your assets to be transferred very smoothly when you pass away without court delays or unnecessary expenses that are completely unavoidable if you come in and get the right documents in place now. So that's why working with an experienced estate planning firm is so important. And at RJP Estate Planning, we've helped over 40,000 Arizona families protect their assets and avoid probate for the last 30 years.
And that's the voice of Stephen Levine. So, Stephen, what steps can our listeners take today to protect themselves while they're still living? And more importantly, at least to many of us, is to protect the inheritance of our loved ones.
Sure, yeah. So for listeners today, if you own a home or, like I said, and have investments or other personal assets over $75,000, the answer is to create a living trust. With a living trust, your assets transfer directly to your loved ones, no court delays, no legal battles, no unnecessary costs. And when you get a living trust with RJP Estate Planning, we'll include all the essential estate planning documents like the financial power of attorney, the medical power of attorney, the healthcare power of attorney, living will, to ensure your medical wishes are honored if you become incapacitated, plus as part of the RJP estate planning settlement support, which will guide your loved ones after you pass through that step process. So to me, that's most important. You have a trust in place. The trust has the rules that you set, which say, hey, this is the person running point. This is the trustee in charge. These are my beneficiaries. Here's the direction. But we always say, hey, that person you put in charge, they're probably going to need hand-holding and guidance. So that's always complimentary. We don't charge for those types of appointments. So if that person needs some hand-holding and guidance after you pass away, we're always here to support them as well. And we also help you fund your trust, meaning the trust, is a set of rules, but those rules only apply to whatever assets are in your trust. So we have a checklist. We make it really easy saying, hey, this is what you do at the bank. Let's help you put your house in the trust, sort of a one-stop shop. So we're offering a 65% discount on a living trust if you're 60 years or over. Plus, you'll receive everything we talked about, the power of attorneys, living will, no additional cost. This offer is for a limited time for the first 20 callers. So don't wait. Call us at 520-441-4523. That's 520-441-4523.
Well, Stephen, I appreciate you joining us today. That is truly an incredible offer. Today's listeners, if you don't have an estate plan, now's the time to protect yourself and your family. So don't hesitate to call RJP Estate Planning today at 520-441-4523. That's 520-441-4523. And if you're one of the first 20 callers, you get that 65% off of a living trust, plus receive all the other important documents at no cost. Thank you, Stephen, for joining us today. I appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks, Dad. You too. Take care.
Take care. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today on Jump in Tucson. And we'll see you next week.